Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. After spending the past few weeks fixated on AI disruption risk and macroeconomic data, investors were reminded Friday morning that tariffs are still a factor when the Supreme Court struck down the IEEPA tariffs. Perhaps lost in that story was the release of Q4 GDP data. So joining us on this snowy Monday morning to discuss this all and what it means for the investment outlook. Glad to welcome back Jason Dreho, head of asset allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. Jason, good morning to you. Hope you're surviving the blizzard of 2026. We're not in the studio today as a result, but nonetheless, it's great to be back on with you to begin another trading week.
Good morning, Dan. Yeah, happy Monday. It is a beautiful snowy morning to start the week, yeah, until we have to deal with the dig out later on today, but so far, so good, at least for me.
So with that, Jason, let's move right into it. I know we did receive some interesting developments on the trade front this past Friday. So let's begin with the Supreme Court verdict on the IEEPA tariffs. What does it mean, and what should we expect the Trump administration to do in response?
Well, I think we have to start with what the Supreme Court actually did, which is they struck down the IEEPA tariffs, saying that the president doesn't have the legal authority under the legislation to unilaterally impose those tariffs. And this was kind of expected, you know, based off of a hearing back in the fall, you know, given the questions that the justices asked. But this wasn't kind of, you know, surprising. The question was really, then once this happened, like, how would the Trump administration respond? And, you know, President Trump gave a press conference on Friday afternoon, and then later in the day, he signed an executive order imposing a 10% tariff on foreign goods under Section 122. And on Saturday morning, he increased it to 15%. So it was a fairly kind of quick response. These tariffs only last for 150 days without congressional approval extending them. And since we are in an election year, like a midterm election year, I think the odds are long that there'll be enough Republicans who go along to support that, which means that these tariffs that are supposed to take effect at 12:01 Eastern time on February 24th, so just past midnight on going from Monday to Tuesday, the tariffs would expire on July 24th. So you're well into the summer, you know, and only a few months before the midterm elections. President Trump also said during his press conference that other tariffs are likely to be imposed under Sections 232 and 301, which then they target more specific industries. And so there's multiple levers that the administration can pull. And some of these have a stronger legal kind of grounding versus the IEEPA tariffs, which I think were already kind of questionable to begin with. And then that's, of course, what the Supreme Court ultimately ruled. So the net effect of all this is maybe kind of summed up by the Treasury Secretary, Scott Bessent, who said that that ultimately, they think that the amount of tariff revenue generated, you know, in 2026 is likely to be basically the same amount had the IEEPA tariffs not actually be struck down. So the composition would be different, but the total amount would be roughly the same. The one thing that the ruling does entail, though, is it reduces the flexibility of the president to impose tariffs, because a lot of cases over the past year, he would decide, I'm going to impose or at least threaten a tariff on a different country, and he was doing so out of the IEEPA authority, and would use that as often as a way to kind of get leverage for, you know, other countries to kind of back down. So loses some flexibility, loses some negotiating leverage. And so that is, you know, one of the consequences, you know, as much as, you know, perhaps the actual, you know, specific tariff rates, that leverage kind of goes away. So this is kind of the implications of the Supreme Court ruling. This is so far how the Trump administration has responded.
So, Jason, let's talk a bit about your latest blog titled A Run It Hot Verdict. You address within what this decision could mean for the Run It Hot narrative and the market outlook. So what did you conclude?
Well, the Run It Hot was kind of a consensus market narrative to start the year based on the idea that U.S. growth was likely to accelerate early in 2026 due to stimulative policy. And much of that was a consequence of past policy actions, including the passage of the One Big Beautiful Bill last July, 75 basis points of Fed rate cut from September to December, and the drag from tariff policy uncertainty ultimately kind of alleviating. So that was sort of, you know, could help to stimulate growth in the first half of 2026. There's also a belief that Trump wants a strong economy going into the midterm elections. There was a flurry of policy proposals the first week in January, which all shared sort of this common element of trying to address affordability by reducing borrowing costs. Those actions sort of supported this thinking that Trump and team want the economy to be strong, kind of running hot going into the midterms. And the initial response of Trump to double down on tariffs in light of the Supreme Court ruling isn't exactly a tailwind for this run hot narrative. But ultimately, the subsequent tariff decisions will be the ultimate arbiter of, are they supportive of that or not? Once the dust settles on the Supreme Court decision, the administration's tariff decision still may favor kind of this kind of run and hot sort of thesis in the marketplace. As I already mentioned, the 122 tariffs are already set to expire, kind of with a known date. That means that companies can kind of manage around that to some extent. When it comes to other tariffs imposed through 232 or 301, the administration has discretion over, when they impose those, but also at what level they choose to impose them. It's already the case that the tariff exemptions were being applied to certain goods, certain foods, to certain steel and aluminum products, all but you can say sort of motivated by affordability concerns. So there was some flexibility among the administration to sort of acknowledge that. So even before the Supreme Court ruling, a view that we would have had, I think a lot of investors had, is that ultimately the effective tariff rate would already like to fall this year, even before the Supreme Court decision. And that should still be the case. And, estimates like the Yale Budget Lab had the effective tariff rate at close to 17%, eliminated the IEEPA tariffs, took that down to roughly 9 by their estimation. And then with imposing the 15% new tariff across the board, that takes it back up to about 13.5%, 14%. So if this ends up being, through rebuilding that tariff all through other means in that same range, it's still ultimately kind of consistent with the general direction where we, CIO, as well as I think investors in general, expect the tariffs to fall. And that really kind of the reason for that is ultimately, tariffs are politically unpopular. Inflation is even more politically unpopular. So the administration might want to be judicious in ultimately how they apply tariffs going forward and be more selective in their imposition. So a lot is happening in the immediate aftermath of the Supreme Court ruling. But as we can kind of take a step back and think over the next few weeks, couple of months, you might see a more measured approach by the administration because of these political considerations. And that all that would support, at least at the margins, sort of this front of hot narrative.
So, Jason, just focusing in on the health of the economy as we were receiving those developments on Friday with respect to the Supreme Court ruling, we did receive as well Q4 GDP data that morning. So was it consistent with an economy that is running hot? What did you take away from the data release, Jason?
Well, the data suggests that it is sort of happening and that it should continue for a variety of reasons. I would just make a caveat that we're still dealing with the after effects of the government shutdown that lasted over 40 days in October to November. There's still lag with certain data. For example, the GDP number that we got, that was the first estimate for Q4. It was coming relatively late in February. Normally that would have come out in late January. So I think as a result, we're still not getting a really clean measure of what is the true state of the economy. But just taking the data what we have and looking at the GDP report, real GDP increased at on a 1.4% annualized rate in Q4. Now, this was below consensus expectations, but it also suffered from a 1.15 percentage point reduction due to the federal government spending being lower as a result of government shutdown. So in other words, if that had not happened, if there wasn't a drag, growth would have been around 2.5% in the fourth quarter. So what the government sort of shut down took away from Q4, it should have since give back into Q1. So you could add almost 1 percentage point of growth to Q1 just because that likely reversal. I mentioned 2.5% would have been sort of roughly the number. And indeed, what we saw is real consumer spending rose 2.4% annualized in Q4. And that's likely actually rised in Q1 and in Q2 because tax refund season should be better than normal. As a result of some of the One Big Beautiful Bill tax changes being retroactive, tax refunds should be higher. Estimates are anywhere from between $50 to $100 billion. Early tracking estimates suggest it's starting to trend a little bit above that path, although it's still early. But that should be a boost to consumer spending as we go later to Q1 and into Q2. Business fixed investment rose 3.7% in Q4, and that should get a further boost this year due to all the AI capex spending. Coming out of the Q4 earnings season, the big hyperscalers who invest in billions and billions of dollars into building out AI data centers, their total spending is now forecast to be about $650 billion in this year, or that's roughly around 2% of GDP, and that's higher than it was going into the earnings season, by at least $100 billion. So a lot more sort of investment that will take place that will have knock-on effects for the rest of the economy. So again, higher consumption, higher investment, those things should sort of really be driving growth, and the lack of a drag from the U.S. government at the federal level also sort of should be boosting growth early in this year. So again, kind of supporting this growth acceleration that's critical to this running hot narrative. Now, the policy uncertainty caused by the Supreme Court decision is not necessarily helpful, but I think that's more of changing perhaps the slope of the increase rather than the direction of going higher. But ultimately, I think the next couple of months are going to be kind of critical for this kind of run-up narrative. We need to see the data actually showing signs of that, including growth picking up, consumer spending picking up because of the tax refunds. The labor market data suggests we've now at sort of a stabilization point after softening for much of last year. Do we actually see then, as other parts of the economy start to pick up, a labor market, job growth actually also kind of picking up in a more kind of clear fashion? We'll need to see that over the next couple of months. And then, of course, what does the administration do on tariffs? The initial response over the first kind of 48 hours suggests an aggressive reaction to AI tariffs being struck down. But again, once we get a little bit of distance from this, do they take a more measured approach to make sure that the tariffs don't become too disruptive for the economy in a midterm election year? So if we're on track, but I think the next 2 months we'll give a kind of clear indication whether this run-ahead narrative could extend through much of the first half of the year, or it's getting close to running its course.
So it sounds like a lot to figure out on the tariff policy front, and we'll see how this plays out in the months ahead. Though, given these policy considerations, Jason, let's end our conversation today on positioning. So let's talk a bit about the latest recommendations from the Chief Investment Office when it comes to asset allocation. What can you share with us?
Well, the tariff news, it doesn't really change our constructive view that we have on equities. It has been predicated on growth accelerating and so the markets also kind of stabilizing after a lot of this AI disruption and turbulence that we've seen over the past few weeks. So constructive on equity is kind of a key thesis we have. It's sort of like this kind of great broadening. See other parts of the market, aside from the tech-related beneficiaries or the AI-related beneficiaries, outperforming. That includes sectors in the U.S., but also is kind of a global story overall. As a result of all this, we did downgrade as CIO communication services last week, and this follows to a neutral view after being attractive, and this follows a downgrade of tech also from attractive to neutral that we did the prior week. The downgrade of comm services was matched with an upgrade of industrials. So if you kind of look at our sector preferences, three of the attractive sectors, the consumer discretionary, financials and industrials, all kind of cyclical oriented sectors, kind of consistent with the idea that if growth picks up, these should do well. And we saw consumer discretionary also be one of the winning sectors after the IEEPA tariffs were struck down, because it is goods oriented and we import a lot of goods. Regarding tech and comm services, I'd want to reiterate that we're not negative on the sectors. It's just we don't expect them to be potentially outperforming the markets in the way they have for a number of years. And until there's some of the questions about AI disruption risk can really be resolved, it's not easy to falsify a view that in 5 years, a lot of companies perhaps will have low or zero terminal value. Until investors can be comfortable about what that means for this player, I think it's hard for those sectors to sustainably outperform. And also the AI capex spend is surging. It's not going to go zero or negative anytime soon, but I think the growth rate is going to moderate. And if the growth rate moderates, that has implications certainly for other parts of the tech complex, because the incremental growth of buying semiconductors starts to slow. That's going to impact a sizable portion of the overall tech sector. So constructive on equities, but it's kind of looking for areas beyond sort of the obvious AI to the story of tech and comm services to other parts of the market in the U.S. and globally. In other asset classes, we continue like gold as a diversifier. We saw that last week. It would kind of rally on days that were sort of a risk-off environment. We think that will continue. for other structural reasons as well, for gold to have support going forward. And then in fixed income, we favored securitized credit over this year over sort of corporate credit, and there's some of the concerns about the financing of AI CapEx spending, which is mostly in the kind of the senior loans in the private market, but you're seeing it now for huge issuance and investment grade corporate bonds. Still very high quality issuers overall, but just a lot of supply to absorb. So it's difficult to see kind of a lot of spread you're checking in that environment. So we're a little bit more selective within fixed income, preferring securitized credit, some emerging market US dollar bonds because of kind of this great broadening story applies to some extent to fixed income as well. And being cautious on interest rates, the 10-year has traded between like 4 to 4.4%. For much of the past year, it did get closer to 4%. So we've got an environment where, if anything, the risk starts to skew to rates going higher. So we're a little bit cautious on taking too much duration risk at this point in time. So bottom line, still relatively constructive, but the markets, now that they have an additional uncertainty on tariffs to sort of deal with, in addition to the AI uncertainty, may lack clear direction in the very near term, but ultimately, I think the fundamental story of good growth, good earnings will ultimately win out and drive equities higher as the year goes on.
Well, Jason, very helpful catch-up to begin the trading week as we came off a very busy Friday with respect to trade developments, and we will, of course, monitor how that all plays out and what it all means for the markets in the months ahead, and helpful to hear some clarity around CIO's investment recommendations as well. So with that, Jason, wish you a great week ahead, and as always, do look forward to our next conversation here on Top of the Morning.
You're welcome. Have a great week.
Thank you, Jason. Again, today we have been speaking with Jason Draho, Head of Asset Allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. Again, I do want to highlight for you Jason's latest blog, which we have been referencing on today's episode. The title of Jason's blog, again, is A Run It Hot Verdict, which is available now on ubs.com/CIO. And for clients of UBS, simply reach out to your UBS financial advisor if you would like to receive a copy of Jason's blog directly. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.